Welcome back. I'm Jojo Fraser. It's time for Emoji Injection, episode 188. And this week I've got an amazing guest on, and I'm really looking forward to sharing our chat and breaking stigma. It's what we love to do. Helping the misunderstood to be understood, because that's not good for the mojo when we feel misunderstood. When we feel misunderstood, we can feel lonely, and lonely, they say, is more damaging than smoking 20 fags a day. I think it was 20 or 25 or 30, but you get the idea, right? Loneliness is a killer, and I think a big part of that is not feeling seen, not feeling heard. I'm just really looking forward to sharing this with you. I hope you're doing well, hope you're looking after yourselves, and just sending you lots of love, and it's great to have you here. So my guest is the wonderful Carlos Alba, who is an award-winning journalist and author. He has actually written a couple of pieces about one about my TEDx talk and one about my hacking on Instagram. So I really appreciated that, because the guy's an award-winning journalist, so a great person to cover a story. But he's not just a journalist, he's also an author, and he spent 10 years at the Sunday Times, including 4 as Scotland's editor. And he also has been Scottish political editor of the Daily Record and education correspondent for the Herald. So lots of topics, a wealth of knowledge. He's a winner of 5 National Journalism Awards, and he writes books on top of it. So what we're talking about this week is his third novel, There's a Problem with Dad, which was inspired by his experience of observing his father-in-law with undiagnosed high-functioning autism. And I just love that he took this project on. I love how he created this character, George, and worked hard to really get across what's missed, or what people are trying to say, or what people struggle with high-functioning autism. So we'll talk about that. So Carlos now works as a freelance journalist as well as running a public relations consultancy. The boy does a lot, doesn't he? Carlos Alba Media in Glasgow, where he lives with his wife and 3 kids. I am delighted to welcome Carlos in. I will put all the details in the show notes. And let's get him into the mojo den. Okay, let's do it. Mwah. Okay, Carlos, welcome to Time for a Mojo Injection.
Hi there, I'm ludicrously happy to be here.
Oh, it's great to have you here. And I've noticed you've got a Beatles top on, and in the book, there is a little link to John Lennon, isn't there? There's a problem with Dad.
I wanted to kind of introduce this kind of popular reference as a kind of counterpoint to, to the main character's, George's, behavior, to demonstrate his obsessions, and the obsession he has in the book is that he's writing a biography of John Lennon. And I chose that just because I happen to know an awful lot about John Lennon. From my childhood, my kind of teenage years, when I thought, John Lennon kind of held the answers to all the world's problems, and that all we had to do was give peace a chance, I'd read a lot of books about the Beatles and John Lennon, and it was a kind of bit of an obsession for me for a while, though it was quite a kind of simple thing to do, And yeah, and my kids now buy me Beatles memorabilia, including this sweatshirt. So,
That's good. It's an easy gift for you to, some people are so hard to get for. Just get Beatles stuff. Is that like every year? So I was thinking about, the inspiration for this book, and I just think it's amazing. Any awareness around mental health or taboo topics. So was the inspiration through a family member that had high functioning autism, or what? Talk to us about the inspiration for the book.
Yeah, I mean, it was my father-in-law who died in 2013. But I, I kind of lived in, in proximity to him for about 10 years, just by virtue of the fact that he was my father-in-law. And he, some of his behaviors were a bit kind of odd, and they were just kind of dismissed by the family as, oh, just that's dad, he found it difficult to engage with people and didn't really have any friends, and all his pursuits were very solitary. And he had kind of other things, text he had difficulty with the textures of foods and things like that. But I think they were all just regarded as separately and never brought together, and never viewed together. And then I was reading a book by a former colleague of mine, a woman called Sally Brampton, who had she had severe depression. She was bipolar, but in the middle of her biography, she talked about her father, who had undiagnosed high functioning autism or Asperger's. And over the course of about, I don't know, 10 or 15 pages, she listed all the things that he did, all the symptoms, and it just, everyone kind of struck a chord with me, because they were the same behaviors that my father-in-law exhibited. And so I mentioned it to my wife, and it was really just like a kind of, shot between the eyes, because she was in her 40s and had lived with, this man all her life, and suddenly this was an explanation as to why he behaved the way he behaved. So that was kind of the inspiration for it. It was inspiration rather than, him forming the, him being the central character. He's not. It was just that I found the, viewing the way he behaved, and then learning that this was a thing, that high functioning autism was a thing that wasn't immediately obvious, that could be masked, or just that somebody could go through their life without ever being diagnosed. I just thought it was a really interesting subject to write about.
It is, I think, for mental health as well, because I'll say to people often, you've got to separate the two, like you're not anxiety or you're not, because sometimes people attach themselves to the labels too much. But I guess with this, is it a sense of who you are? Can you detach the person from the, what would you even call it, the condition, or what's the right word for it?
Yeah, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of people with Asperger's. The Asperger's is now a kind of contested term. It used to be called Asperger's, but now it's kind of referred to as high functioning autism. Some people still use Asperger's, and there's not really a lot between the diagnoses, but they used to be interchangeable, but now people prefer to use the term high functioning autism. And yeah, it's, they don't regard themselves as having an illness or even a condition. It's just a different way of thinking. In their own minds, and in their own community, they that's just normal, and normal for them. And I say community, as if there's a kind of commonality of symptoms. There's not. People with high functioning autism have, often can just have completely different sets of symptoms. There can be two people with no one symptom the same, but they're on a spectrum. And yeah, I mean, we talk about identity. That's an interesting issue as well, because is that their identity? And for a long time, the identity issue was probably a complication, because people never thought, oh, my dad or my brother or my uncle or my husband has, autism. They would just think, oh, that's just the way, he is or she is. And yeah, particularly men, men are not particularly demonstrative. They're not particularly kind of, emotionally out there. A lot of them do prefer their own company. So a lot of these symptoms can just be put down to, oh, that's just a typical man. With women, it's slightly, it's slightly different. Women are much better at masking the symptoms of autism than men and become much more skilled. So it's much more difficult to diagnose them. And the statistics suggest that there are far fewer women who have autism than men, but I think that, the kind of modern orthodoxy now is that that's not the case. It's just that it's much more difficult to diagnose women because they're so much better at masking it.
We're better actors, are we?
And just, just, are maybe more prepared to, to be sociable, to, to try to be sociable in a way that, that men don't. As the kind of typical kind of grumpy old man in his kind of 40s or 50s, can be a kind of suggestion that that man actually has, has autism.
Interesting. And I think it's hard when you get a diagnosis later on in life, right? Because you, how do you sit with that? It's a lot to process, it's a lot to take in, and then people may start treating you differently.
I mean, I think that's that's really true. I mean, and my father-in-law, when we suggested to him, when my wife suggested to him that that he had Asperger's, he didn't take it kindly. He, somebody of his generation and and just his mindset thought that we were accusing him of, of having a mental illness, or or being, being, what used to be called a, a loony, or in in the jargon that, that was used when he was growing up. But the more he looked into it, he kind of came to accept it that he probably did. So yeah, it does seem strange that somebody can go through their entire life and then have this kind of label attached to them. And for some people, it's a relief because, they've gone through their lives kind of suspecting that they're out of step with the rest of the population. And when, when something is presented to them as an explanation for that, it, it does, it helps them. It comes as a relief to know that that there's at least a, a reason for this. With others, yeah, they maybe have difficulty because of common perceptions of what having autism or having a mental health condition means. But I'm glad to say that that is now being, addressed publicly. There are lots of kind of campaigns, lots of people talking much more openly about it. Celebrities, people in public life, kind of announcing that or revealing that they have autism, and for a lot of these people, that's probably a relief for themselves, but for a lot of people that have known them, it's it's probably a, quite surprising.
Yeah, and it's just it's so important that the more people that can talk openly, even it's hard, but when you're ready to, even as well, it takes a little bit of time. When you were putting George the character together, what would you say the key lessons you learned? Because obviously you had lots of things you wanted to get in about the behavior and that real sense of being different.
I mean, I think the main thing I wanted to, to get across was the kind of internal dialogue of what it's like to, to be different and to, every day to confront different situations in which you're unfamiliar and you're having to kind of wing it because you don't really understand, the nuances of engagement with other people, and how, kind of difficult and exhausting that, that must be. And also, But also the impact that that can have on the people out of that person, because their behavior can be challenging, and it can be difficult to interpret, and it can seem quite quite tiring, and just challenging to the to the people around them. So yeah, part of the book was to kind of get to try and get inside the mind of somebody that thinks differently, but also to kind of demonstrate the the impacts and the the different ways in which their behavior can impact the people around them. And the context against this was, coming from a generation where there was no recognition and no help. So everyone involved in the process, the person with autism and their loved ones and their colleagues and their friends and anyone else that came in touch with them was kind of flying blind. There was no kind of guidebook, no guidance, no stories in the media, in the 90s or noughties about and before about how these behaviors can be can cause issues within families and within workplaces and so forth. And and there are lots of examples of people with autism either get in trouble with the law or failing to progress in their careers because they don't have they don't have the necessarily have the emotional intelligence. They can be very, in fact, people with autism often do have very high levels of particularly numeracy and kind of skills with left-sided brain skills, but they lack the kind of emotional intelligence to be able to get on with people at work. And my father-in-law was like that. He was very bright, very clever guy, scientist, but he didn't get as far in his career as he would have liked because he didn't know how to kind of play the office game or the office role, to how to do well in interviews, how to come across as personable in interviews, and those sorts of things are really kind of problematic for people with autism.
It's really hard, and I think it's important that there's more education out there for people in terms of what we can do if you're not experiencing that. What we can do to relate better or to make things easier with for someone with high functioning autism. What did you learn when you were kind of putting that together? What can people do to help?
Yeah, I mean, I think just having an understanding of it, because there is this tension that people with autism feel about not being treated as differently. Certainly, kind of, institutionally, the modern way of working and the modern orthodoxy is to, is for people with autism to remain in mainstream education, for them to, not to be, kind of singled out as exceptional and to be, to be treated the same as the rest of the population. So that's good. But I think, yeah, from just a kind of personal engagement point of view, the thing that we all need to kind of, when I say we, I mean kind of neurotypical people need to kind of understand and try and address is recognizing when we're talking to somebody who might, have high functioning autism, and to just to kind of treat our responses accordingly, to have a better understanding of the fact they might not necessarily be great at personal engagement, and to avoid trying to, to avoid using, phrases that might be confusing or the language that they might have difficulty interpreting, all these sorts of things.
Yeah, that's it's good because there'll be a lot of people that don't realize or taking things personally, oh, why are they being like that? And not actually having an open mind. For people listening that don't know what the key symptoms are, then what are the key ones to watch out for?
As I said before, there are lots of people with, people with autism have lots of different traits and different behavioral characteristics. But I think the most general ones are a difficulty in understanding the nuances of conversation, not necessarily getting phrases which idiomatic phrases that can be confusing, and that was a particular issue with my father-in-law. One of the things that first kind of made me realize that he was a bit different was that it was difficult having a normal conversation with him. A normal conversation involves, me saying something, you responding, me then responding to that, and there, we'd kind of develop a narrative. But with him, it was a kind of series of just kind of stop start statements. He would say something, you would respond, and that would be the end of the conversation, and then there would be kind of a long silence, and then the process would be repeated. So I think the main thing, is just kind of being aware of how language can be, can be confusing, particularly some of the phrases that we idiomatic phrases that we use that can't always be picked up on. But other traits involve, as I said before, kind of solitariness, doing things on their own, having, not having many friends. They can have difficulty kind of processing, kind of different types of information. And then there are kind of physical symptoms, particularly kind of with things like food. They often have very limited ranges of things that they can eat just because they have trouble with the texture, with processing the texture of food in their minds. There's like, there's lots of different things, and different, different people have different symptoms. So
You feel like
what
you're
about
doing a bit of a checklist when you're writing the book. You're like, have I got a scene to cover that or a scene to cover that?
I know. I mean, one of the things is humor. Humor can be very difficult. And yeah, my father-in-law, he was just a straight down the line Benny Hill guy, he understood Benny Hill because it was just a guy, with lots of scantily clad women running after him, and he found that funny. But he just, some particularly, kind of modern stand-up comedians, alternative comedians, that sort of thing, he just couldn't get his head around, and that was quite amusing to watch, but then, other people, there are other people who have autism who are really funny. There are comedians with autism. The last year I was at the Fringe in Edinburgh, and there was a comedian with autism, and it was hilarious. So it just shows you, there's no right or wrong.
Yeah, there's not. I think it's amazing that you're raising awareness. So keep it up. And I'll put links to the book in the show notes and everyone check it out. And I always ask, what's your favorite song that helps to wake up your mojo? Is it going to be a Beatles one?
Yeah, probably. Has it got to be a kind of upbeat song, or can
It
it
can be,
be?
no, it can be. Apparently, sad songs make us happy. You ever heard
Really?
that? A musician told me that. But it can be
It would
anything.
have to be a Beatles song because, that was, that's my favorite band. And when people ask me, I always have difficulty. I mean, there's a song, While My Guitar Gently Weeps, is probably the one that always, kind of springs to mind first. So that's probably my favorite, although it's difficult to choose.
I love that one. I love it. Yeah. Oh.
And it's, yeah, bizarrely, it's not a Lennon and McCartney, it was George Harrison that wrote it, but yeah, I just think it's amazing.
Oh. Well, keep singing, keep writing,
Okay.
doing all your great journalism stuff as well. A man of many talents, obviously. It's been really good to have you on Time for a Mojo Injection.
Thanks for having me. It's been great fun.
Thanks for sharing more about the book, and yeah, it's amazing, amazing what you're doing. Wings at the play you are staging, while my guitar gently weeps. What a song! Good choice, Carlos. Let's get people dancing to this around their kitchens or just chilling out. Lovely song, beautifully written piece. Still my guitar gently weeps. The Beatles, While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Give that one a listen, guys. Wake up that mojo. Look after yourself. All my love.